This is Resonance 104.4 FM, flipping marvellous. How you doing? Tis I, Nicholas of Henningen, coming at you once more. Over the airwaves and under the sea and through the methane and down the tubes and, you know, cables. Yeah, you get the idea, don't you? Resonance 104.4 FM, we're also on bohemianbritain.com if you want to check out these shows and, you know, other stuff that's happening. And I hope you're well. I hope you're having a good time. We're kind of going, oh, well, a bit American, even though I'm working like a crazy thing at the moment getting a show ready for the Edinburgh Festival Fringe this year. It's called The Birth of Frankenstein. No, it's not like that at all. It's more about Mary Shelley, the woman who at the age of 16 ran away with an older married man. Oh, yes. And they ended up in Geneva, Switzerland. And at the age of 18, she wrote Frankenstein. So it's a brilliant story, working on that. But another legend who we're celebrating this period of time is none other than Ernest Miller Hemingway. Born on the 21st of July in 1899, he passed away on the 2nd of July 1961, the American novelist, short story writer and journalist, of course, famous for his economical and understated style, which included his sort of iceberg theory or theory of omission, a writing technique that he coined as a sort of young journalist. He had to focus as a young journalist on his newspaper reports on immediate events with very little context or interpretation. So he took those skills into writing short stories and then, of course, went on to the bigger books that we know. He was awarded the 1954 Nobel Prize in Literature. He published 7 novels, 6 short story collections, and 2 non-fiction works. He was born and raised in Oak Park, Illinois. After high school, he was a reporter for a few months for the Kansas City Star, and then, of course, he left for the Italian front to enlist as an ambulance driver in World War I. In 1918, Hemingway was seriously wounded and returned home. His farewell, his wartime experiences, of course, were the basis for his novel A Farewell to Arms. In 1921, he got married, first of four wives. They moved to Paris, where he worked as a foreign correspondent for the Toronto Star, or Toronto, as I think you say if you're proper North American. He fell under the influence there of various modernist writers and artists of the 1920s, kind of lost generation, the expat community. His debut novel was The Sun Always Rises, was published in 1926. He got married again and divorced and married again in 1927, and they divorced after he returned from the Spanish Civil War, which was on 1936 to 1939, which he covered as a journalist and which was the basis for his novel For Whom the Bell Tolls in 1940. He got married the third time. Martha Gellhorn was his third wife, I do believe, in 1940. They separated after he met Mary Welsh in London during World War II. Hey, oh, I say. Hemingway was also present with Allied troops as a journalist at the Normandy landings and the liberation of Paris. So he had a fantastic, interesting life. He maintained a permanent residence in residences in Key West in Florida and, of course, most famously, in Cuba in the 40s and 50s. But he was also very fond of a particular bar in Venice. It was called Harry's Bar in Venice, and during his time in Venice in the late 40s, he practically lived there. I can relate to that. Oh, yes. Well, not Harry's Bar, because I've actually never been to Venice, but there's one or two bars in West London and perhaps South Birmingham that might say, yes, he lives here. The bar actually featured, he used to quite often drink with the owner as well, of course, and he had a table on his own. The bar features in his short story Over the River and Into the Trees, which was written in 1950. And I've managed to find a recording of Ernest Hemingway himself in Harry's Bar talking about a new book. See what you think of this.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is a great honor to be with you tonight and to discuss my new book. This is one of the things that I love to do most, and it gives me great pleasure that I can share it with all of you. The book came to me in a sort of a haze in Harry's Bar. In Venice. Harry's Bar is a small place, but it is, in effect, a microcosm of all of that great and beautiful city which has been so well described by those writers, Ruskin, Sinclair Lewis, Byron, and others. The hero, if he can be called a hero, of this book is a young colonel, 18 years old. He was made a colonel, no one knows quite how, and stationed in Trieste for his own sins. He is a fanatic at shooting at all things, including objects floating down the Grand Canal, and he has come to Venice to practice his, shall we say, avocation. In Venice, in Harry's bar, which has become almost a sacred place to those of us who know it and who have enjoyed both the credit and the hospitality of Cipriani, he meets an Italian, or rather, should we say, a Venetian countess, aged 86. In the corner of the room is a princess of Greece, named Aspasia. The young colonel is mad about the Princess of Greece, but still he has his countess and his obligations. The action of the book, ladies and gentlemen, only takes place during a period of 48 days, during which the colonel, who is continuously in Harry's bar, known to the local residents or indigentes as Cipriani's, is continuously drunk due to his own efforts and his credit with Signor, speaking Italian, Cipriani. For 40 of these 48 days, the colonel is unable to find his countess. She has taken refuge in the Basilica. Naturally, she is given full facilities there and enjoys herself very much, looking out of the upper windows and studying the action of the pigeons. During this time of indecision for the young colonel, who is on indefinite leave by the request of his superior officers, he makes the acquaintance of a beautiful Venetian maiden, age no one knows what. Some say 16, some say 17, others who are treacherous say 18. She, through her powers of seductiveness, induces him to visit the island of Tornicello. The colonel is accompanied by his faithful black priest, who is his spiritual advisor and can almost be regarded as his spiritual manager. Together, they make a pilgrimage to this island, a very ancient part of the lagoon which surrounds Venice, a town which I shall describe later after consulting my Baedeker. It is love at first sight between the colonel and Aftera. There is nothing to be done. It is a hopeless love, but much can come of it. And the colonel takes advantage of this situation in a manner which might be criticized in certain circles, but which we will attempt to condone due the presence of his faithful black priest, who at this moment has passed out. Aftera, or Aftera, as the name is pronounced by the local inhabitants, is indomitable. Nothing like her has been seen since Attila the Hun sat in the sacred chair of Torricello. The colonel, who is an extremely devout Catholic, having only been expelled from the church at the age of 16, loves Aftera as he has never loved anyone in all of his existence. Aftera loves him as she loves the front page of Europale. What greater comparison can we make? God himself is absent for a time, probably on his own business, but he returns to Torricello to bring happiness to these star-crossed lovers. Aftera and the colonel marry. But, ladies and gentlemen, there is tragedy in all of this. There is a tragedy that one can hardly say without having his voice break. Aftera is the victim of a heart condition, a cardiac condition, acquired during her youth. The colonel cannot stand to see her die, and so he himself swims off into the sunset, headed, as far as we know, toward Chioggia, a fishing port. Well down the coast, but the colonel can swim, and we hope that he can make it. This, in a quick resume, is the story of my new book, and I hope that everyone will buy it, paying $3, and the 20% of each of these $3 will go to me to pay Gallaretta and other people first, and then to go to the Fondacion Aftera, which is to commemorate that great soul who has brought us such happiness. I thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for your patience.
The man himself, Ernest Hemingway, at Harry's Bar in Venice. This is Resonance 104.4 FM. I'm Nick Hennigan. It's Literary London. We're also on bohemianbritain.com, and we're celebrating, well, Ernest Hemingway, who was born and passed away in July. When he was, married numerous times, but he finally decided to erase himself at the age of 62. But before that, in the early days in Paris, he had some unpublished manuscripts, and they were eventually appeared as a movable feast, it was called. And there were two love poems published. They were written to Mary Welsh Hemingway, who he met as a fellow war correspondent and married in 1946. And this is a recording of the man himself reading the second poem to Mary.
Now sleeps he with that old whore Death, who yesterday denied her thrice. Repeat after me. Now sleeps he with that old whore Death, who yesterday denied her thrice. Pause. Wait for them to close up. Continue. Did you deny her? Yes. Thrice? Yes. Repeat after me. Do you take this old whore death for thy lawful wedded wife? Repeat after me. I do, I do, I do. KIA 6OFF 61 EM 13th September 2400 14th September 2400. Translate. Killed in action, 6 officers, 61 enlisted men, from midnight 13th September to midnight 14th September. Repeat after me 67 times. I do, I do, I do. 67 times. Continue. It is continued. In the next war, we shall bury the dead in cellophane. In the next war, we shall bury the dead in cellophane. The host shall come packaged in every K ration. The host shall come packaged in every K ration. Every man shall be provided with a small but perfect Archbishop Spellman, which shall be self-inflatable, courtesy of air reduction, open, closed, previous, open, closed. You don't need to repeat this. There is not any ceremony anymore. Everyone is gone, and you say this out loud to yourself. You are alone at the time, and the time now is always. Always was a word you used in promises. It is valueless. All officers, warrant officers, and enlisted men will be provided with a copy of their own true loves that they will never see again, and all these copies will be returnable through the proper channels. My own true love is Mary Welsh. Then, of course, she will be returnable. But I, on this day, will not accept the signature of Archbishop Spellman, nor of you, nor of you, nor of you. You may all go now, all of you. Go as quietly as possible. Go as far as possible. You may even take Possible with you, if you can find him, and you may hang him or dispose of him in any manner that you see fit. Today, no one uses slang because clarity is of the utmost importance. Fucking alone is retained, but it is used only as an adjective. Sweating out is retained. It means that which one must suffer without any possibility of changing the result or the outcome. Those of us who know walk very slowly, and we look at one another with infinite love and compassion. This comes only after 100 days and is one of the final symptoms. There has been irritation, anger, fear, doubt, accusations, denials, misinterpretations, mistakes, cowardice, inability, and lack of talent for this work. All this has been and will be again to be counterbalanced by firmness, steadiness, courage, quick understanding, and the ability both to maneuver and to fight. But now, for a moment, there's only love and compassion. Know how to endure, and only love and compassion. Repeat it. Only love and compassion. For the FBs too, battle fatigues, officers, men, midnight, 13th sep. We don't give any numbers, midnight, 14th sep, no. Then it is not compassion. Not for the battle fatigues too, and yes, it is love and compassion. How can you say that here? How can you say the other? Not that we ask for more, not that we wish ever any, not that we wish any all, not that we want any greater. But when they walked away from that undiscovered country, from whose bourne no traveler returns who hasn't been there, they walked away from this we cannot state. And in them died this inner knowing that grows, fresher and lovelier than any rose, manured by death and watered only with unshed tears, until this day it flowers into this love and this compassion. Not for them, no, I am sorry. Then it is not complete, no, nor will it be ever. There is no contrition. No bloody fucking contrition. Only love and compassion. Reach out your hand to love's dark sister hate and walk with her across that hill we slowly walked and see if love is waiting at the top or who is waiting there instead. Did I tell you my heart is a target of opportunity? Love's lovely sister, lovingly unloving, unworryingly succeeding, procuring unprocuringly, never wholly wrong, nor more than half right, holding unholdingly to hold where love leaves easily without address. Love lightly leaves without a trace, and her dark sister fills in all the forms. All the forms so neatly filled, the writing clear and good, where love's is often quite illegible, scrawled lightly in a hurry as she smiled, giving unimportance to the page. Do you think there upon the hill we'll find her there? No, she's long gone. She never stands to fight. Knowing too well the idiocy of battle, love's always gone, leaving us only the deserted sacrament, as one finds dinner on the table in the house of a new-taken village. So that we wear it now. Traces of it are worn on our chins, like remnants of the yolk of the rare and much-desired egg. Our scooped-up, newly-eaten sacrament, bringing it with our newly-issued pictures of our true loves up toward the high ground beyond the town, toward the easy, dirt-mouthed smile we had denied so many days, D plus 108. Now all move slowly, plodding up that hill, making feet slowly go where they know better than to take you. Feet are wise and feet are wary. Feet of John and feet of Harry. Feet know better, feet won't go. Make feet move on slowly now. Make feet follow where no plow leads you ahead, where things are sown toward the place where you'll be dead. Returner now through the prescribed channels. Returner. This will aid you. Song to aid you to returner. What they will do to others, they will do to you. If you never suffer, God will see you through. Onward, Christian soldiers, marching to a whore, with the cross of Mary Welsh going on before. Throw your love away. You must do it slowly now and pray. Pray to all of nothing, pray to all of nil, throw away your own true love walking up a hill. Repeat it now again. Now sleeps he with that old whore death who yesterday denied her thrice. If you know, if you conceive, if you too, if, not the poem that was given you framed for Christmas in Oak Park, Illinois, written by Rudyard Kipling, but the other if, older than the if of Hamlet, the old, long, ugly if that we have faced in all the nights and all the forests of our hearts, always coming out into a clearing, always sighting finally the smoke of the campfire. Now, on this wooded hill again, ifingly to proceed, if me no ifs, my true love, while we expend that which is not expendable, while we destroy that which is indestructible, with nothing more than harassing fire. Nothing more than that. All my heart is a target of opportunity. All of us have been interdicted. This is not the way it was. I have not been there. No one was there. No one saw it. Your guess is as good as mine. Make a guess now while it is easy. Get your guess in early. Try and get your guess in for tonight. Especially for tonight. Tonight, we... And there are only 89 days more until Christmas. Put in Christmas. All of us will die today. Hail to Father Christmas. Old and young together say, Hail to Father Christmas. Bright the colored flax bits shine. Hail to Father Christmas. Bright today our love divine. Hail to Father Christmas. D+1 0109. Hail to Father Christmas. Christmas minus 99. Hail to Father Christmas. Come, let's put it on the line. Hail to Father Christmas. No longer Christmas. And from this hill, there topped, its flanks covered with Christmas trees, many further hills are seen. So, Mary, now I love you straight and true, and send you this to let you know that we had a rather sticky day today in the forest. Casualties were fairly heavy, and a certain amount of battle fatigues, many more than there should be, but there are many contributing factors. I'm getting sort of mixed up on a lot of things again, but much clearer on others. Very hard to write about this stuff. It is different from the boat. In the boat, we were always waiting for it. Here it is the happening all the time, and who it happens to. I do not think about me at all anymore, bragging again. I think about you, and that brings me in. I write you awfully dull letters, darling, because I get tired and sort of emptied out. And all I have to tell you that I can write is that I love you.
The second poem to Mary. And it's kind of groovy and great hearing Ernest Hemingway talking in his own voice. And that's our celebration of Ernest Miller Hemingway, the hard-drinking, multi-marrying, a brilliant American novelist, short story writer and journalist. He was born on the 21st of July, 1899. And due to various illnesses, he committed suicide on the 2nd of July, 1961. His papers were donated to the John F. Kennedy Library in the United States, and his late wife, his wife Mary, actually set up the Hemingway Foundation in 1965. So his memory lives on. And now we've celebrated him here. Thank you very much. If you'd like to get in touch, of course, radio@mavericktheatre.co.uk, or I've actually, you can get me nick@bohemianbritain.com. Oh, ah! nick@bohemianbritain.com. But that's all we got time for this week. Thank you very much for your company. I'll see you soon. I'm Nick Henningham. This is Literary London on Resonance 104.4 FM.